I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello and welcome back to a Thursday evening. The Nighthawk Nest. No, I'm just kidding. Like, we call it the Nighthawk Nest, but we're both University of North Georgia Nighthawks.
I don't know about that.
You don't like the Nighthawk Nest? No.
I didn't mean to kill your intro. I'm sorry.
Also Matt Green, who just jumped in. But you've done so many shows with me now. We've just known each other for so long, Matt, that it's okay. It's not rude. Once you've known somebody for a certain amount of time, it's not the same as just a random guest chirping at the beginning of my intro. This is different.
True that. I'm not just some rando.
Mm-hmm. Before we get started, I want to talk about your photo shoot with the pups that you posted to your Instagram, and people can follow you at Matt_Dev_Green on both Twitter and Instagram. But I didn't know your new pup was not a purebred.
No, we like to call him a Muttweiler because a hashtag Muttweiler. I don't know if you caught that, but yeah, because he's a Rottweiler, but I think he's like got a lot of like German Shepherd or something in him too. But he's looking less and less like a Rottweiler by the day. But yeah, you know, I had to get some social media content out there. I'm basically strictly a dog Instagram account, you know, so, you know, I don't know if that helps or hurts my following. I feel like a lot of people like dogs, but
you can't go wrong there.
But yeah, we were at a family function type thing, like Memorial Day. And, Tori was like telling someone like, yeah, we got another dog. And she's like, I didn't see another dog. You don't even put it on social media. Like, what are you talking? Did you really get a dog? You know? So I was like, you know, we're a two dog household now. I gotta at least get Maddox some content out there.
Yeah, it was about time. Like, if it's not on social media, then it really didn't happen to a lot of people.
So a couple of those were older pictures, but I was like, he didn't have any of those puppy pics out there, so get him up there.
Is he going to be bigger than Zeus?
No, I feel like he'll be like half as big as Zeus.
Does he think he's like, as big as Zeus?
Which I feel like Tori's disappointed about, but I'm cool with like a 75 pounder.
Wait, why is Tori not about it? She wants the bigger dog.
She wants the big dog. Yeah, she wants the biggins.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm in the market. In the very next, you'll see in the next couple months, this sometime this summer, I'm dipping my toes back into the primary dog ownership group to pair with the ladies' dog. I've gotten the itch, and I like the two dog household idea, and just keep them on their toes and just have some company when the rents are out of the house, just so they're not bored out of their mind all day.
That's true. These are the things you have to concern yourself about.
It's important. Did anything else pop up since last Thursday that you would like to discuss Matt Green.
I don't know. I feel like you said it like there was something that I needed to mention. Like,
No, I'm just curious.
I don't think so. No, what about you, man?
When did I get back from vacation? I don't know. It's been a blur. I'm thinking I got back like Wednesday, right? Because did we record last week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were back.
Yeah, you were the first one back. Okay, that's what it was. I started back on Thursday last week. Yeah, so I was back. Tennessee just rampaging their way through the college baseball circuit happened last weekend, so I'm excited for that this Sunday.
How is that going? To be honest, I'm not paying attention.
Well, we're in the College World Series now.
And that's down to 8, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And we play Virginia.
And it hasn't started yet?
Sunday. No, it starts Friday.
Nice.
Yeah, double elimination. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. A couple SEC teams in there. A couple ACC.
Of course.
Yeah.
It just means more, man.
Well, NC State knocked off Arkansas. Arkansas was just the premier team, number one all year long, got bounced in the Super Regionals. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. So shout out to the Wolfpack. This is a very Wolfpack-friendly podcast, and that's part of the reason I'm really open today. Like, Matt, you know me. I love Dave Doran. Love a good Raleigh, North Carolina segment on this very program, Matt Green. NC State has a very interesting slate of games. All the love in the college football world is surrounding one team in North Carolina, and it's not the NC State Wolfpack. There's nothing sexy or fun about the Wolfpack. They don't have the two-headed running back monster like North Carolina. They don't have the potential number one overall pick quarterback in Sam Howell like North Carolina. So they're just under the radar a little bit, under the radar. But you look at the schedule, Matt. You look at what the NC State Wolfpack and Dave Doran, almost Tennessee football coach Dave Doran, could pull off. You're like, huh, this is a team that could be pretty solid, like S&P Plus, which comes from Bill Connolly of ESPN, formerly of Film Study Hall, and also author of a great book called Film Study Hall that I would highly encourage any college football fan to read. They play at Mississippi State, which I've circled as something I'm going to definitely watch. You got Louisville at home. You got at Wake, at Boston College, at Florida State, at Mississippi State. Those games all go NC State's way. Suddenly, it's like a 9-3, 10-2 type season. NC State's schedule. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, there's so much room for gamblers. If you want to make a pretty fun, interesting bet, I think you bet on the Wolfpack right now.
So I noticed when you're going through those games, you didn't mention Clemson. You didn't mention North Carolina.
North Carolina's a toss-up.
You didn't mention at Miami. Oh, you did mention North Carolina?
No, what I'm saying is those three, like, that's the
thing.
You
think those are all losses, right?
Yeah, and that's why they can go 9-3 if these games flip their way, and they're all toss-ups.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah, and so last year, 5 of their 12 games were decided by 3 points or less. So, and they were 3-2 in those games. So that's what it comes down to, and that's probably what turns a team from a 4-8 team into an 8-4 team like they did from 2019 to 2020. But so I was reading a little Athlon Sports on the NC State
Shout
Wolfpack,
out to them.
Right? Shout out to Athlon Sports. But, well, first of all, the model of consistency, I feel like NC State is a little underrated.
I'll be honest.
They've been between 7-9 wins, 9 of the last 11 years.
Mm.
Like, for how up and down so much of the ACC is, like, that's pretty respectable. You're in a bowl game at the very least, a respectable bowl game 9 of the last 11 years. Like, you got to respect that NC State. But so I'm reading Athlon Sports' preview, and they're talking about Devin Leary, obviously Bailey Hockman, he's gone, he's at Middle Tennessee State now. So Devin Leary is the guy, right? He only started 4 games last year.
Look good though.
But yeah, and so in the article it says Bailey Hockman was whatever. He was fine, but he wasn't the NFL caliber quarterback that NC State is used to. And I'm sitting here like, NFL caliber quarterback, NC State, like, is that some kind of quarterback factory? I do some digging. 4 of the last 5 starting quarterbacks NC State has had made it to the NFL, play in the NFL. Like, it's a low key quarterback you over here. Do you think you can name the 4 of their last 5 quarterbacks that are all in the NFL?
Yes.
Go for it.
Mike Glennon.
That's correct.
Ryan Finley.
That is correct.
Russell Wilson.
That is correct. I thought that would be the tricky one that'd get you.
And not Pip. Hold on. Who am I missing?
Right in between Glennon and Finley.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. This is going to drive me nuts. Right in between Finley. Did he transfer?
He transferred in.
That's what I thought.
And he started some games in the NFL. Like, low-key a lot of games, honestly.
Oh, my goodness. No, hold on. Let me think. I'm still thinking.
Tick-tock.
Give me 10 seconds. Give me 10 seconds. Give me 10 seconds. Hold on. 9, 8, 7.
I think the time's up.
5, 4.
He was a Florida transfer.
Florida transfer. Driscoll? No.
Jacoby Brissett.
Oh, Jacoby.
One of the black marks on Will Muschamp's tenure is Jeff Driscoll, or no, Jacoby Brissett transferred, and that
Went to Louisiana Tech.
Murphy transferred, Driscoll transferred, everybody transferred. But yeah, so NC State, I was like, wow, they're low key, and then obviously you skip a couple quarterbacks, and then you got Phillip Rivers too. But yeah, that's a one stat that stuck out to me. So I'll be interested to see what Devin Leary does as the full time guy.
Yeah, I think NC State is going to be an interesting school. So just keep an eye on them. Shout out to the Wolfpack. Don't ever say that we didn't give you the support that you deserve on this very podcast.
I'm banking on them. I'm banking on them between 7 and 9 wins, though. What's their over under? I gotta find that. Their win total.
Let me see. NC State 2021 odds wins. 6.
Oh, 6?
Yeah, give buy that.
Hammer that.
Yeah,
NC
I would
State,
hammer
they're,
the
they're going between 7 and 9.
Yeah.
All right.
We're going to make some people some money this fall. Like, go ahead and do it now before Vegas figures out the pack are probably guaranteed to win more than 6 games.
Damn it.
There was some weird stuff.
Caesars is already listening to this. It's the cover's blown.
Hey, I don't know if you saw Blue Wire opening up Wynn Studios and the Wynn Resort in Vegas. So. A lot of inside there, like that's gonna be really cool. Studios actually in the lobby. Very excited
that's
about that.
Sick.
Northwestern has had a time, to say the least. Matt Green, have you been keeping up with the fact that they lost their AD to become the Mr. Phillips to become the AD or the commish of the ACC? That was a long time ago now. I think his name was Jim Phillips. Then they promoted from within their associate AD, who was controversial, and then he resigned. Mike Pliske.
Can you refresh me? What was controversial about?
He only was there for 10 days, but it was, I think, So Pliske was so a number of students, faculty, and alumni responded to outrage. Pliske, in addition to the university, was one of the 4 defendants named in sexual harassment lawsuit filed by a Northwestern cheerleader in December, who alleged that he accused her of fabricating evidence and did not fulfill his duty as a mandated reporter under the school's Title IX policy.
Mm.
Yeah. But a lot of athletes, alumni, and executives at Northwestern were all about him and didn't really back it. Like, it got really ugly quickly. So there was a huge divide there, and I think the football program really wanted him to have it, and then they had to scramble because this is like a 3-month process to finally just promote him. And then they go out and they get former Tulsa athletic director Derek Gregg, who has a very storied history and was currently the NCAA's senior VP for inclusion, education, and community engagement. He's a Vanderbilt guy. Makes sense, Vanderbilt guy ending up at Northwestern. But yeah, Derek Gregg is the new AD. Like, this was just been a very tumultuous, bad PR situation at Northwestern. Just a really, really bad look for them as a whole.
So what do you think in the end? Do you think this is a good hire for him?
I mean, we'll see. Like, it's not like Northwestern, like Greg Pitt, he doesn't have to do anything really, right? Like, you got Pat Fitzgerald as long, like, he's turned away the NFL. He's good there. He's made it clear that he's happy in Chicago or Evanston, whichever you want to call it. I think the fact that he's not having to worry about that, and the basketball program kind of fell off. Baseball is not a big thing at Northwestern, so I don't know. I just think it's kind of like the Vanderbilt thing, where it's, I don't think it's a high pressure job at all. I don't think being the Northwestern AD is a high pressure situation. It's not like being
You can't compare it to Vanderbilt, just because Northwestern can legitimately compete, like, in the conference, you know? Like, they've been, like, they're not beating Ohio State, I don't think anyone thinks, anytime soon, but, like, they've gotten to a couple Big Ten championships, so, you know, that's way more than Vanderbilt can even say. So it's like, I feel like it's almost, it's like a better version of Vanderbilt, really.
Yeah. I mean, he's got the pedigree, and he's got the resume for sure. He's been at Tulsa since 2013, but senior associate AD at Arkansas from 2000 to 2006, assistant AD at Michigan from 97 to 2000. So we shall see, but I do think it's interesting that Northwestern's just had the kind of off season from hell that they've had, and it's all because of their own personal choices. 247 Sports, great website for all college sports fans, have the five-star recruits that face prove-it years in college football. Matt, which names stood out to you most on this list?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of interesting names on this list. Definitely is a little Georgia heavy. So I thought that was interesting. One thing that stood out to me was the 2018 class. Is like, you know, that's Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence's class. They're number one and two players in that class. But it seems like there's kind of a lot of five stars from that class that didn't really turn out exactly what we thought. I mean, in just this article alone, I mean, six of the top 25 players from that 2018 class on it. And that doesn't even include a guy I thought probably could have been included here too, was Zamir White. Like, they have Nolan Smith and Adam Anderson. Like, Nolan Smith, I'm not as sure about. I think this is a real prove it year for Nolan Smith to prove that he, like, has it, like they're saying, prove it. Adam Anderson, I think this is the year that he just kind of explodes on the scene and finally gets enough reps to show what he can do. But Nolan Smith, I'm not necessarily as high on. Like, he's got a chance to have a great season, but he's still got to show you a little bit more. And then someone like Zamir White, like, I feel like he was the five-star running back, you know, number one player in the country. And he's kind of talked about like he's a known commodity, but maybe it's just being a spoiled Georgia fan. Like, we've seen elite running backs year after year, and Zamir White is nowhere close to what Georgia's had in recent years. So I'm curious to see.
Should he even start? Like, Zamir White should see the field minimally this year. Like, it should be mostly McIntosh and Cook and Milton. Like, I don't want Zamir White out there at all.
Well, but being the second full year removed from ACL, like, you saw, like, Nick Chubb from 2016 to 2017, like, he really got back to his normal self in 2017. So I'm wondering if maybe there's a gear of Zamir White we haven't seen yet, and another year removed from the ACL surgery, we might see that. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Kendall Milton is the best running back on this team. I think that's what we're going to see, but with how Georgia splits the carries, like, none of those guys might rush for 1,000 yards. But, and I also thought Darian Kendrick was an interesting guy to be on here, because, you know, he's a 2-year starter, all ACC kind of player at Clemson. And so he seems like he has panned out. But Xavier Thomas is another one. I think he sat out due to COVID last year, right? So yeah. he's another one of those guys who I feel like you've seen on the field enough, and you see enough flashes that, like, he looks legit, right? But he just doesn't have the production necessarily to match it. And I think a full year, you know, back in the lineup, I think you're going to see him show why he was, like, I think the number three player behind Fields and Lawrence.
I cannot believe Hunter Johnson's still on this list. He stinks. Like, And also just a Northwestern quarterback. What are we doing? Like, he's spoiler alert, folks. He's not going to prove it this year that he was worth the hype with Davis Mills. I think the name that
Chase Thomas
most to me,
hates Northwestern. I think that's the conclusion I've come to on this podcast
sucks.
For the last
like,
year.
Don't bet on Pat Fitzgerald to fix any quarterback. What are we doing? Like, how many years have you watched the Northwestern Wildcats offense? Like, they have not been able to figure out the offensive side of the ball his entire time there. They win entirely because of their defense, and he's a great defensive mind, but that offense stinks every year without question. The name that pops to me on this list is Justin Shorter. With how much just production departed with Tony Grimes and Pitts at UF, like, everything is lining up for him to just be the next breakout Florida Dan Mullen superstar out wide. Like, I think Shorter should have a huge, huge year in Gainesville.
That's a good call. I when guys are around for, you know, a couple of years, you start to wonder, well, maybe they just shouldn't have been a five-star to begin with. You know, like Justin Shorter, we've seen so little of him. You know, he didn't do much in his short time at Penn State, and then but he's been playing behind a lot of productive receivers/tight ends at Florida. So that could be the reason he hasn't got on the field. So that's one that this is definitely a put up kind of year for him. But what do you think about Bo Nix?
I mean, I forgot he was SEC freshman of the year. That can't be right. Like, he was awful as a freshman. I'm trying to remember like who the candidates were that year, but I don't know how that happened. I mean, it can't be worse than, like, I think what's going to benefit him most is just getting out of the Gus Malzahn effect, where the longer a quarterback is with Gus Malzahn, we've seen, the worse it goes for them, right? Like, Stidham suffered from this. All kinds of quarterbacks have suffered from this in the past. Nick Marshall, yeah. I don't know. He's insanely inaccurate, but he's also got TJ Finley in there now. Demetrius Davis is there. I think the pressure is on with Bobo and this group, and Brian Harsin is going to be asked to make a big change with this guy. Like, he's just, I don't know. Bo Nix is just, he's a gamer, but then you look at this stuff of, like, he was 40th of 66 quarterbacks last season who took 50% of their team's dropbacks. And but, like, when you watch them, you're like, I don't understand how this works. Like, he is
just, what is,
I don't know. He's just not the kind of quarterback that I would want in a modern college, or really just a modern in a, like, just football offense in general. Like, he's just too inaccurate. He's too all over the place. And I don't know. I promise
I'm not calling you out specifically, but what is a gamer exactly?
Like if I was around, like, that dude just runs around, not scared of contact. Like, how many times did he just get drilled by Georgia defenders in that game last year? Like, that dude,
He was running for his life. And that's the only reason I don't necessarily see anything changing, because I don't think Auburn's going to be any better on the offensive line. Like, that was the biggest weakness of their team last year, and I don't know that it's gotten better. So, and I think one of their guys was in the transfer portal. Not 100% on that. It may have been a defensive lineman. But I just don't see Auburn on the offensive line getting better. I feel like Bo Nix doesn't get benched, though, because of the whole, like, gamer thing. I just feel like they love him. Like, I feel like they want Bo Nix to be the guy. And I feel like he's like a try hard, right? Like, I feel like you just know he's giving everything he's got, and, like, you see him running around on the field. Like, the fan base respects him. Like, they want him to be better. I feel like he's going to be good enough to hold on to the job and, you know, lead Auburn to 8 wins or 9 wins maybe this year. But, yeah, I don't, sometimes guys just shouldn't be 5 stars. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, I'm sure he was great in high school, but not all 5 stars pan out. And some of them could show why they were 5 stars this year. Like, I think John Emery Jr. is another one. Like, he could definitely show out this year at LSU, but some guys, you know, they just weren't 5 stars. Like Demetrius Robertson, I'm sure when the composite talent rankings are given to Georgia, like, Demetrius Robertson's a 5-star, and I'm sorry, Demetrius Robertson was never a 5-star. Like, he was really fast prospect coming out of high school, but he was just never that good of a player. So, and obviously he just entered the transfer portal as well. So It'll be interesting to see which guys pan out, and obviously we following recruiting, we know they won't, they all won't.
I think he'll be just fine in Knoxville in the Baylor raid system. I think Demetrius Robertson's gonna love it.
Wait, where's Demetrius Robertson gone?
I'm just saying he fits naturally, and Heupel's still looking out for some track athletes out wide. Like, Tennessee's trying to add more guys in the portal at wide receiver at the moment.
He's probably good enough to play for somebody, but I think he was going to be like 6th, 7th wide receiver at Georgia.
Yeah, he'd be like the number 2 or number 3 immediately right now. It'd be him and Jalen Hyatt. Like, there's a bunch of question marks out wide for the Vols right now. Arizona State, like, we're recording this late on a Thursday. Like, Herm Edwards could be gone by the time some people are listening to this Friday morning. This is bad, Matt. Like, the situation here is it's pretty bad. And it just kind of sucks for our old friend, Herm Edwards. He's done great work there. And it's, like, not even the traditional stuff, as someone pointed out. I forgot who made this thing of just, like, we're so used and conditioned to being a paying players illegally and, like, the McDonald's bags and all kinds of stuff that, like, when it's hiding players for official visits because of COVID protocol and breaking COVID protocol, like, this is what is going to do them, is just trying to get recruiting advantages by just getting people on campus when they weren't allowed to. It's just rare. Like, this is a weird story, and it's just dumb. And it, like, Kevin Mawai being the whistleblower from Keyshawn, ESPN's Keyshawn Johnson, because Herm didn't promote him to offensive line coach when their offensive line coach retired. So Mawai left for a pro job. Like, then he turned on his coach because he coached him with the Jets. Like, this story has so many different strings and so many different layers that it's just sad, because, man, I like Herm. I like Herm, and I like that Arizona State was figuring it out again, and I like Jaden Daniels, and they had a lot of hope this year, but a lot of questions now about the future of the Arizona State Sun Devils.
So is this a fireable offense in your eyes?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm kind of confused on. Like, it's definitely shady behavior, I guess you would definitely say, but I don't know. It seems like one of the stranger recruiting violations we've heard. This isn't really what we expect when we hear.
Well, it literally wasn't possible unless during COVID. Like, the stuff that he did could not happen in a normal season.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I'm kind of surprised that, like, even, like, parents and, like prospects would go for that, you know?
Yeah.
That's almost the most surprising part of the story.
It's like they knew that, like, this is illegal. Like, when they're hiding you on campus, you're like, hey, this is maybe not the best.
So do we have all the details? Like, where were they hiding them?
I think it was in, like, different rooms, like, hiding them around campus. Like, I think it hasn't come out, like, exactly where they were hiding them. It was just that they were hiding recruits on campus so that people didn't see them.
That's wild. Herm, I feel like he was really putting Arizona State back on the map too.
What's going to happen is if they can tie him to knowing any of this, then he's done. But if they can't tie him to explicitly knowing and condoning that this was happening on his watch, then I guess maybe he can find his way out of it. But I don't know. I think we're gonna have to see.
Yeah, I'm sure he had no idea that players were just hiding in dorm rooms. He had no idea that 3- and 4-star prospects were just on college campus. I had no idea. I just thought they just wanted to come see the campus.
Well, I will tell you that the reason that college staffs are so stacked these days is to insulate these coaches so that there is plausible deniability of, like, hey, we have people in charge of all of this, like recruiting coordinators and all this stuff, where it's like, we don't want to know. And y'all just do what you got to do, but I don't want to know. Like, that is a real thing that a lot of these like Nick Saban is so insulated at Alabama. Like, and Kirby, I think, is probably the same way at Georgia now, where it's like they're so protected that that there is a policy of, like, how would we know if anything's going on, any improper benefits or any improper rule stuff? Like, we're not around. We're focused on the big picture.
Hey, whatever Saban's doing, I think all Georgia fans are hoping Kirby's doing the same thing.
I mean, yeah. Remember when Rush Probst tried to get them both axed? What a time. the main event of this very off-season show, Matt Green, is college football, also coming to us from college football's biggest 2021 defining games. This comes to us from 247 Sports. Are all 10 of these games on here the 10 that you would put, or do you have other games on your calendar that you've circled that did not make this cut?
One of the only ones I was surprised didn't make the cut was Florida Alabama. Because that's a game we don't get every year, but maybe we're thinking, I guess is the logic that Florida's not a legitimate contender this year. So, because I mean, you got Georgia, Florida in here at what, number seven. You got Florida LSU in here at number nine. I just see Alabama, Miami. Like, it sounds sexy. That's number 10 on their list. And it's like, I feel like we've seen this game so many times. Like, we've seen this non-conference team that's ranked, I don't know, somewhere between 10 and 20 play Alabama on a neutral site to start the year. Say, oh, maybe they could give them a run. No, they're getting smoked. Like, I saw, like, some 24/7 released, like, I don't know if you saw some, like, week one predictions, score predictions on some of those, like, early games. And their prediction for this score was, like, 52-24. It's like, who just predicts a 52-24 just, like, blowout? Like, that's where Alabama's at. Like, I feel like that's – Alabama's going to win this game by, like, four touchdowns. Like, it's not even going to be close. It sounds cool, Miami and Alabama and Atlanta, but I feel like that game's going to be a total dud.
I don't know about that. Like, I think, which of these do you think that's the most likely dud of the group that made this list?
I definitely think so. I mean, I could see, I would say the next biggest, like, candidate to be a dud is, you got at number six, Penn State at Ohio State. Like,
I don't think that'll be good at all. They play,
I think that'll probably
really
be
well.
A good game. I'm not sold on Penn State.
Well, but I mean,
I think these are
classic,
all going to be.
Penn State wins that one, but then Ohio State still wins the conference, and Penn State just gets into the just
but
outside
how many
the
times,
playoff
bowl. How many times has Penn State beaten one at Ohio State, though? It seems like they're usually
it's
at home when they pull off those like crazy upsets, it seems like. But, you know, Ohio State, first-year starting quarterback, I feel like Ohio State's like one of those biggest, like the biggest, I don't know, like different outcomes of the season, because like obviously they can't be like bad. They're Ohio State, but they could either be number one, like run the table, or I could see like a two or three loss season this year. Like Ohio State, and especially with the Oregon matchup you got, that's also at home, but that's going to be a really interesting one for me. I might, they had that at four. I may have had that higher. The one thing I'll say is, number one, they have Georgia Clemson. And that's definitely the sexiest game of the year. Like, we're going to be talking about that game, like, all year long, most likely. Like, just as, like, a data point. Like, well, they're better than them, and they're better than them. Well, they beat them. Like, we're going to keep bringing up Georgia Clemson, however it turns out. But the game is also, like, not really that important. So it's kind of tough to put it at number one. You know what I mean? Like, if Georgia loses, it'll be unfortunate. But, I mean, if they run the table and win the SEC, they're in the playoff, no big deal. And Clemson, if they lose, you know, there might be an image issue. And just a kind of, we've talked about the ACC being weak. And then if they lose to an SEC team to start off, they might not get the benefit of the doubt late in the season. But, I mean, if that's their only loss, and Georgia, I would assume if they beat Clemson, is going to be a top four team by the end of the year, you're going to see, like, that's their only loss. Clemson's going to get back in the playoff if they run the table. So while it's such a sexy matchup, it might not really be nearly as important as an Alabama and Texas A&M, like they have number two, or like even Georgia, Florida, or like number three on their list, Iowa State, Oklahoma. Like, I might have put Iowa State, Oklahoma number one, just because Iowa State is a legitimate contender this year. And if Oklahoma's going to lose a regular season game, like, that's the one.
See, I would put Iowa State in this list.
Would you?
Yeah, Iowa State is like, because I, like, we'll figure out how real Iowa is very quickly, because I think Iowa, as we talked about last week, has a very real shot of being the biggest challenger out west and going to the Big Ten title game. I think they're the dark horse, and if they beat Iowa State early, I think that game is just always fun in general, but I think it'll be a big one. I don't think Texas, Oklahoma made this list, right?
No.
Like, Iowa State at Oklahoma is probably the right one. Alabama at A&M, perhaps. We'll see. You know what? With Georgia, though, Georgia-Clemson, like, Florida-Georgia is interesting, but I don't think Florida-LSU belongs here at all. Like, I don't think that game's going to mean anything. Like, I think that's, unless you really believe LSU is going to have the turnaround. Like, I'm still pretty out on that one. I'm more in on Florida State and Notre Dame. Like, Florida State and Notre Dame is, I think, going to be sneaky close. Like, the amount of transfer production that Florida State just brought in, and with the amount of lost production at Notre Dame, I would not be surprised at all if Florida State beats Notre Dame. I think this is going to be a fun early test. I think Notre Dame is going to take a step back this year, and I think Florida State's going to punch them in the mouth. It's going to be fun.
I could definitely see Florida State beating some people this year. What do you think? So what do you think about Cincinnati Notre Dame?
I think that's huge for Cincinnati, not a big deal for Notre Dame.
Oh, see, I disagree. I mean, I think Notre Dame, they look at themselves, especially not playing in the ACC, like not having to play Clemson, like they look at themselves as just as regular in the playoff as Oklahoma or Ohio State at this point. You know what I mean? Like, in that Cincinnati game, that's going to be maybe the best opponent on their schedule. Like, I mean, North Carolina, I guess, could be a tougher matchup, but Notre Dame has got a lot of these games that I don't think they go unscathed in all of them. How many of these toss up games do you think Notre Dame wins? If you got North Carolina, Cincinnati, you include Florida State. They got USC,
like,
right?
I just think they're going 8-4, 9. I think they're going 8-4 this year. Like, that's my prediction.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Cohn's going to be their quarterback this year, man.
The thing with Florida LSU, though, is I don't think either of those teams is a legitimate contender. But there's just something always exciting about that game. And I feel like what's the title of this article? Like, season defining?
Yeah.
Games, it feels like a tone setting kind of game. Like, it's usually like early October, right? I don't even know when the date is of that game, but it always seems like one of those first big rivalry games, and so that could be what they're going for season defining, because it seems like that game's almost going to be like a crossroads, like, of which direction these two teams are going. Like, is Florida going to contend again, or is it a bounce back year for LSU? I kind of think I could see them meaning that when it comes to season defining. And also, that game is October 16th. So that's going to be the week before their bye week before the Georgia game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got Alabama at week 3, Tennessee week 4 at Kentucky, and then Vanderbilt, and then at LSU. Florida could be looking at their second, maybe even third loss by that week. So it could be interesting.
Surprised USC didn't have a game that made this list. Let me pull up USC, because I think they're still the dark horse and probably should be considered the favorites in the Pac-12. They have a real shot at the playoff. I think Oregon has real questions. Without Tyler Shook at quarterback, they're going to go in with potentially Anthony Brown. Let me look at theirs. I'm pulling theirs up right now.
And also, to your point of, like, which of these could be duds, I think Oregon at Ohio State, I think that one does have potential to be a blowout.
Ohio State blowing them out, yeah.
And also
USC at Cal. Give me USC at Cal.
USC and Cal?
That's a potential in November Pac-12 decider. You know me, I'm a big Justin Wilcox, Bill Musgrave, Chase Garber's guy.
Hey, who knows? That could be it. At Cal?
At Cal in Berkeley.
Who knows?
Who knows? Matt Green. Any other college football nuggets? You got some nuggets, I seem to recall, that you'd like to...
Oh, I do have some nuggets, some closing nuggets here. So one thing you didn't...
Do you remember we went to Wendy's one time in between classes and you ate a shit ton of nuggets?
Shit ton of nuggets. I probably if I know myself, I would have eaten some nuggets and a junior bacon cheeseburger. That was always my Wendy's jam. You know, get a little bit of chicken, get the junior bacon. That's where it's at. But I don't remember that specific time, but I am fond of some Wendy's.
Hmm. What's your go-to Wendy's order?
That's one of the few places that I have like multiple orders. Mm. Most places I go get something, I got like the same thing I order every time. I don't know about you. Like, I mean, if I'm going to like Taco Mac, like I'm ordering the same wings like every time. Just like an order of just like 10 traditional like buffalo, like hot buffalo.
Oh, you don't do all flats. You don't,
No, I don't. I can't stand people who do all flats or all drums.
That's I'm an all flats guy.
That's like being, people always ask like, you're an ass or a boobs guy, you know? It's like, what universe do we have to choose one or the other? Like, you need all of it, you know? And so sometimes I like the flats, sometimes I like the drums. I don't see how he could choose one or the other.
Mm. This took a turn.
But it did take a turn. But a couple headlines we missed. Have you seen the newest bowl sponsor?
Oh, no.
The Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl.
What?
Yes. It's going to be played in SoFi Stadium. Jimmy Kimmel is literally like the name of the bowl game. It's absurd. It's like an early season bowl, like December like 18th or something. But yeah, the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl. And then there's a home and home series that we did not announce. Miami and Auburn, 2029 and 2030, doing a home and home series. So I have a question for you. Mm. When was the last time Auburn and Miami played each other?
Long time ago. 1994.
That is incorrect. The answer is 1984.
Oh,
Auburn is 7-4 all time against the Hurricanes. 1984 is played in the Meadowlands to start the season. Number one Auburn lost to number 10 Miami 20-18. That was Hurricanes were the reigning national champions, and this was the first game of Jimmy Johnson's tenure at Miami. And so they actually ended up going 8-5 that year, despite beating number one in the opening game. But yeah, Jimmy Johnson's first year at Miami was the last time these two teams played. So college football expansion, you're seeing all these sexy home and home games. I love it. Miami and Auburn 29-30. Like, they've played a bunch of times, like looking at it like in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Like, it's like a regular thing. So we need these teams that are geographically close to each other, like we've talked about, Virginia Tech and Tennessee. Like, these teams just need to be playing each other. It's just, it's so good for the sport. It's you love to see it.
Mm. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm also just still annoyed that Charlotte is getting Georgia Clemson this year. It's just, I really think I'd be a lot more amped for it if it was in, Clemson Stadium more.
Worry, because I think 2023 and 2024 they're going home and home. So I think next year Georgia plays Oregon in the Chick-fil-A kickoff, and then I think Georgia Clemson is going to be. And I think one of the years they play Clemson might be one of the years they're playing UCLA going out to the Rose Bowl too. So these Georgia at a conference games are going to get a lot of fun in the next few years.
Absolutely.
Honestly, all over college football, they're going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. All right. Well, go follow Matt at Matt_W_Green. Keep up with his stuff there. Go check out his Rottweiler putt, his Muttweiler and
Muttweiler, yes sir,
Rottweilers. That's a tongue twister. On his Instagram, but also follow myself at Chase_Thomas. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, Matt and I would appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and a review. You can email us if you would like us to answer college football questions during this offseason at chasethomaspodcast.com. or chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com, but you also can go to chasethomaspodcast.com to get access to all of our previous episodes and all of my writing. Go do all of that for that guy down there in Dacula, Georgia.
How dare you, sir?
Had to do it to him. You know I had to do it to him. And for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is all I've got, sir. We will be back next week.
Yes, sir.
All right, the Thursday evening edition of the Chase Thomas podcast rolls on, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and this guy on the other line, somehow only like 2 miles away from me, we learned prior to this recording, it's Stats by Will, fellow Knoxvillian and lover of Jordan Beck and Drew Gilbert Dingers. Will, good evening, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Good to hear from you. I am quite excited about watching the boys in orange take the field in Omaha this weekend.
I wish it was not Sunday. Like, the Sunday thing is just like, I need it on Saturday. I don't like that we're extending this out into Father's Day. Like, I've already warned family of just like, I will not be all the way there mentally in the afternoon. So whatever we got to do, we got to do before. And if we lose, then I'm going to be pretty upset, but thankfully all my family is UT people for the most part, and most went to UT, so they're all on the same page.
That's good. The time thing is always troubling, because I'm a big fan of early games in general, because you just get out of the way, but if you lose, then you think about it for like 10 straight hours.
The worst thing I did was revealing to, like, I maybe not even revealing, but just pointing out to the lady, the sports renaissance woman, that living on the West Coast is ideal if you're a sports reporter. Like, West Coast life is delightful if you have to watch a lot of sports for a living, because everything's done early. Like, I could be done with the Braves game at like 6:30. Sounds amazing. Like, it's just one of those things where they get football early in the morning, and it's just everything wraps up at a decent hour, so you're not up until 1:32 watching these NBA playoff games.
Yes, the Eastern time zone is just brutal for these, particularly like the Clippers Jazz Friday game that's coming up. I am not looking forward to seeing what time I go to bed.
No, it's going to be rough, but we've had this idea where I think, not just because Tennessee basketball is back, folks, and let me just say, Rick Barnes, we tipped the cap once again on this off-season turnaround you just put together, headlined by Kennedy Chandler, but Tennessee is a baseball school, first and foremost. People forget that, Will, but second, we are a basketball school, and there is a lot of fun college basketball stuff that I think we could still get into. And like, when I was thinking about different ways we could, like, I'm really impressed by your work. And if people have not already gone to your website, Stats by Will, go do that. As of this recording, I'll put links in the bio and all that kind of stuff. But I think there's a way to like incorporate what you're doing onto this podcast, a weekly thing, especially when the regular season comes back, and that'll be here before you know it, because we got like, what, 80 days until Tennessee's playing Bowling Green. So basketball will not be too much longer after that. So we're just going to do some deep dives into some stat-based college basketball analysis. And I think, because we're both SEC guys, Will, we are going to start with an SEC overview here. Now that things are mostly finalized, how would you like to paint the broadest of strokes in regards to the SEC right now?
I think it's on the rise as a conference. I really do. I think there have been some years in relatively recent memory where you could have easily said the SEC was the worst of the Big Six conferences. And there were a couple times where you could have made the case for, you know, the AAC being better. But it seems like now the SEC has sort of settled in into being not necessarily as hyped as, you know, the Big 12 or Big 10 year in, year out, or even the ACC. But being like the third or fourth best conference yearly is not a bad thing. Like, that's pretty good when you have 31 to pick from.
Yeah. So where would you like to start? What would you like if you had to do tiers right now? Will, like, if you're looking at just what teams are bringing in, all the transfers, everything like that, how would you say, let's do this just with the roster movement, who made out the best thus far and who made out the worst?
I think that the teams that you're going to see at the top of these lists are probably pretty common. Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky are what I would say would be like tier 1A in this sense. All three have very real, very serious national title or even or Final Four hopes first and foremost. Then you can start thinking national title. But I mean, all three of those teams should open the season in the top 15. And if you start out there, I mean, you have good reason to think you're going to have a really good year to come. But beyond that, it's kind of hard because there are five teams that stand out in the SEC, but there's three that I think are just that special bit more. Those three I just mentioned. Behind them, Auburn and Arkansas, I think, could be in that tier 1A if they have a thing or two break correctly in their favor. I'm always fascinated by Arkansas in particular because Musselman is hellbent on using the transfer market to his advantage every single year. I don't know if you caught this on ESPN, but they had a little piece where they interviewed coaches about how they, you know, are building their rosters. And Musselman mentioned, like, they will say that they've offered or have chased guys in the transfer market that they actually don't really want, but want other schools they're competing with to focus attention on so that they can get the guys they really do want. I'm just utterly fascinated by his love of transfers. So I think, as usual, those are going to be the teams you're looking for. Florida did some intriguing stuff, and so did LSU, but I think it's those five that are really at the top of this list: Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Auburn, and Arkansas.
I think Kentucky is super fascinating, too, because Calipari had to really adjust with how bad of a season this was, and I think what his decisions this offseason thus far seem to indicate to me that he has learned quickly that the way he was recruiting, the way he was winning in the past is not going to win anymore. And he is changing his strategy, don't you think?
He completely is. It's the most uniquely built Kentucky team that I think he has had to date because, you know, not that they were routinely pulling in the Zion or RJ Barrett level recruits the last couple of years, but they were still heavily focusing those teams on, you know, top 25 five-star recruits year in, year out. And for them to make this kind of sudden change, and it's clearly a reaction to last year when they had the shortened offseason, to go pick out C.J. Frederick, to go get Kellen Grady, to go get these guys that I feel like in the past, you know, Kentucky would have just not cared about. They probably would have passed on the transfer market almost entirely. But I agree with you. I think the way they've built this team is completely different than in years past. And I'm honestly pretty excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah, there's just something weird about bad Kentucky. Like, even when Tennessee went into Lexington, and that game was really fun, which feels like forever ago. That was the Keon game where Keon and Springer just like really went off in that game in the second half, I recall. I remember that being just a really, really fun night.
Yeah, and like for a moment you forgot Kentucky was 5-12
yes.
or whatever they were.
It didn't feel like when you're watching it, because it's just like Kentucky, you're just conditioned. Like, they're awesome. What a great win.
Yeah. Whereas, like, at the end of the season, I think everyone was like, oh, that was just a win over a 9-win team. I imagine it was at least somewhat similar to, if I could remember it more vividly, when North Carolina went 8-20 the one season in the early 2000s. That's the only thing I've seen where, like, a blue blood in my lifetime just completely crapped out of nowhere in a season. And you're right. Bad Kentucky is weird and not really in a good way. As much as it is easy to hate on Kentucky and hate what they do and the fervor of the fans, it's the SEC basketball is just better when they're good. It's as simple as that. When Kentucky is at the top, the league is better.
I'm not ready for Alabama just to be the cream of the crop of SEC basketball. It's just not fair. Like, I don't like it. Nate Oates, like, I was at the Alabama-Tennessee game, And that was brutal. I think my parents came out for that game, but it was not fun. And it was just one of those things where I turned to them. I was like, oh, they're going to win the math game. Like Alabama playing Alabama is just very frustrating because Rick Barnes does not coach that way. And Pons can only block so many shots in one game before you're like, yeah, this is just not happening. And I don't know. Do you still think about like the way we used Keon Johnson and Springer for the most part last year, and just the lack of spacing and not going small more, and just the way that Barnes coached? Because when you think about this new group coming in for Tennessee, because they just completely changed everything this offseason outside of Fulkerson coming back for his 19th season, what do you think about that? Do you think Barnes is going to open it up and change his philosophy similar to what Calipari is going to do?
I think he is kind of set in his ways to an extent. But that being said, you know, a guy who has won as many games as he has and as successful as he is, and let's be honest, gets paid as much as he does, should learn something from last year's dud of an offense. I mean, without getting too deep into it, I've been doing some research this offseason on how many teams still use those lineups with multiple non-shooters like Tennessee did about a third of the time last year. And the answer is the vast majority of top 25 offenses, I think it was 21 out of 25, didn't use a double big lineup at all. Like the majority of coaches out there, you know, by the end of the season would not have played Pons and Fulkerson together. They would have split them up and probably just rotated or tried to limit the time those two spent on the floor. Because, I mean, you saw it down the stretch of the season when Tennessee went double big, the floor shrunk. There wasn't as much driving space. There wasn't as much lanes to get through, to pass through for open shots. And that was why, you know, when Tennessee had those good nights, like the Kansas game in particular sticks out, it wasn't really because they got great shots. It was because that was just the night of the year they were going to hit 70% of their mid-range jumpers. It was like the UCLA Gonzaga game in that way. But you really do hope that, at minimum, I think having Justin Powell on the team in particular will help with this, that Barnes sees the need for more spacing. And, you know, maybe if he doesn't fully commit to playing just one big at a time, maybe he will go both Huntley, Hatfield, and Fulkerson on the court at the same time. You would hope that they've used the offseason to give one or the other some sort of a useful jumper, which at least spreads the floor a little more and enables Tennessee to have, you know, something more than an unwatchable offense.
Yeah, I don't know if I can do it another year. Hopefully it's different and hopefully we learn from it. But man, I'm going to miss Pons. He was such a fun player to watch for such a long period of time. I very much enjoyed the Ponzi experience and I'm going to miss him. How do you think Powell fit in? Do you think they'll just let him shoot the lights out? Like, how do you think he's going to fit offensively?
Pretty well. I mean, I think the cool thing about it is immediately the second he steps on campus, he is Tennessee's most proven and best catch and shoot guy. Like Vescovi's pretty good, but I mean, the thing that I feel like I've noticed with Vescovi is it's either you're going to get 5 for 6 or you're going to get 1 for 7, and you really don't know what it is night to night. Powell is a bit more consistent. And, you know, should be able to more regularly shoot like 40% night after night for Tennessee, which is what they need. If you can have that consistent guy who's opening up the floor, forcing guys to crash on him 25 feet out, that is really going to help with spacing. And I think the hope is that Powell will be a little bit better defensively at Tennessee and more committed to it than he was at Auburn, because, you know, Auburn's defense last year was nothing to write home about. And wasn't really in 2019-20 either. So if they can get a better defensive effort from him more consistently, I think he is going to be a very critical player for Tennessee's March and possibly April fortunes.
Do you think Bama should be considered the favorites in this conference heading into next year?
Yes. I think they've just got the best roster. They got the best system. It is honestly very funny to me that an SEC coach in his second year was like, what if we just do what the NBA has done for 7 years? And it immediately made them far and away the best team in the conference. But
I wonder if other coaches hate that. I wonder if other coaches, like the idea that Calipari wasn't aware of this. Seems very unlikely to me.
Like, I feel like Rick Barnes instead of taking away the mid-range line, he's made it thicker on the practice court. Like, it's a foot wide now, and that's the only lane you're supposed to shoot in. But no, I really do think they've got a great roster. Them getting JD Davidson was so big for them, because now it hurts losing Herb Jones, of course, and John Petty graduated after 17 years of college basketball, but that you get Shackelford back, you get Quinterly back, Primo is back. They added Noah Gurley from Furman. If that plus Davidson is the starting five, that really could be the best starting five in the conference. Right as of now, Tennessee is the only school that I think could match that. So I'm wanting to see how they make some improvements depth-wise. Like, if Keon Ellis can step up, if Juwan Gary can. Right now I think they're the best team in the SEC. I agree with you. It is uncomfortable thinking of Alabama as the number one dog in the SEC. I would like to see them, as a Tennessee fan, knock down, like, precisely one peg. Like, if they were the 21st best this season, I would be like, okay, that's acceptable. Because then they're like a 5 or 6 seed, and they're not really on your mind every single day from November to April.
Yeah. Man, that'd be great. At least they're not good at baseball, and we just don't have to think about them in baseball right now. a brief break from them. How well did preseason projections like KenPom, Bart Torvik hold up in recent seasons in terms of the SEC, Will?
They do pretty well across the board. They will typically, and this is kind of the same with the preseason vote, like for media polls, that they'll miss on a couple of teams. Like, they underrated Alabama last year, though I think everybody did. Kentucky was obviously a miss. But for KenPom specifically, ended up within 25 spots out of 357 total teams on 10 of the 14 SEC squads, which is pretty good for numbers with zero games implemented that are entirely based on previous performance and some sort of half-witted roster projections. And in 2019-20, they were even better. They were pretty much entirely accurate to the final standings outside of being too high on Missouri and Tennessee. So if you go to Bart Torvik's site, you might be a little confused at some of what you see. Like, I am always a little bit befuddled at his site's love for Florida in particular. I do think there needs to just be something built into projection systems. Like, you just click a button that says Mike White coaches this team, and it takes them down 10 spots. Mm. So something that would help.
Okay, but, Danny White listens to this podcast, Will, so we got to be very careful with what we're talking about with in regards to his brother.
That's true. I love Danny White, Mike White, the whole White team. They're all wonderful. If they are willing to sponsor my website, give me 2 courtside seats to important games, that would be wonderful.
Well, he's got bigger. He's not looking for sponsors. He's actually looking for dinner. So I don't know if you've heard about the All In Foundation, Will. But
oh yeah,
Danny White's got some. He's big fish hunting at the moment. He's got bigger priorities than sponsoring websites. He's not trying to spend money. He's trying to make money.
But sum it up. The preseason projections, even this far out, are generally pretty solid. But if you check closer to September, October, especially when Ken puts his out, they are, more accurate at that point, because all of the roster movement is finalized. Aside from very late breaking injuries, everybody knows who will be playing on opening night at that point.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Early favorites for you for SEC Player of the Year. I guess if Kennedy Chandler does not play in enough games, he won't qualify for this. But if it can't be Kennedy Chandler, who is it going to be?
Well, he's on my list. I will say I'm a sucker for homer picks, and I think the odds of a future top 10 draft pick being SEC Player of the Year are definitely not that crazy. But all of these could change due to injuries, due to team fortunes, due to whatnot. But I would say my list of 5 plus Chandler are Xavier Pinson at LSU, Jabari Smith,
And Javon Pinson's Quinterly, the one who came from Mizzou, right?
I'm sorry?
Xavier Pinson's the one who transferred from Mizzou, correct?
Yes. I will note with Pinson, because he's the only player I have on this list that I wouldn't...
He shot lights out against Tennessee, I seem to recall, and that went against Tennessee in Knoxville. Am I misremembering that? Was he the one who was shooting lights out?
He scored 29 points and turned around and scored 5 the next SEC game. And that's kind of his whole career. Is it's like he will show those amazing flashes and then immediately turn back to just mid. Mm-hmm. But you... I would think in a system like LSU's where they score a lot of points, but they are the most efficient offense in the SEC, I think, 2 years running now. But with guys like Pinson, you know, Colin Castleton at Florida, guys in that second, third tier, it's always important to note, like, the last player to win SEC Player of the Year without being on one of the league's 3 best teams by conference record was KCP 8 years ago. So it's like Pinson's fortunes are entirely reliant on how LSU does, like, season long. So that's why
I Anthony Edwards didn't win.
I'm sorry?
Surprised Anthony Edwards didn't win.
Yeah, he kind of had like an on and off season, but he did score a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just it's hard to do when your team isn't in that constant SEC network every night conversation. It's like Yonte Maiden at, I do not know how to pronounce his name correctly, so if he is a listener of your podcast, I apologize. But when he was at Georgia in 2017-18, the year Grant Williams got his first Player of the Year trophy, if I remember correctly, they gave it to him as like a shared trophy, but like Maiden's numbers across the board were way better. He just played on a crappy Georgia team, and that would be my fear with picking Pinson. But I think he has a good shot at being the league's leading scorer, to be honest. He's going to get a lot of chances to shoot.
He's going to get a lot of bags thrown his way in Baton Rouge, I also would suspect. But that's just me. That's just me. Which returners in this conference are the most important?
Quinterly at Alabama, for sure. I mean, Herb Jones got Player of the Year last year, so it's not like a hot take to just pick the next guy up. But to be honest, when March rolled around last year, especially with Jones fading at the free throw line late, it felt like Quinterly was the most important player to their postseason fortunes. I mean, if it went to projections like 1-14, this would just be another best player and the best team award. So, I mean, it would be like a shocker. But Quinterly really is huge to what Alabama's trying to do. Colin Castleton at Florida, I mentioned. Castleton really came on in conference play last year and was so good in certain games. I would love to see how he can improve this year. And then I think an out-of-the-box pick for number 3 here, Victor Bailey at Tennessee. I think be a huge factor in what Tennessee does or does not do this upcoming season. Bailey, I know, is quite the frustrating player for Tennessee fans to watch because he did have some amazing performances, particularly in that backstretch of SEC play. But then I think in that first Florida game, he shot 1-for-11 from the field. If Bailey becomes a little more consistent of a scorer and particularly tunes it up on defense, which I think he has taken to heart and will be working a lot harder on this offseason, Bailey could end up being the most improved player on Tennessee's entire team.
Like, he was a sharp shooter. It's just, I don't even think it's improvement. I just think it's consistency. Like, just the games where he's just getting in cardio versus the games that he's shooting 6-for-7 from 3. Like, it's just, he's very Tony Snellian in the way he plays in Tennessee. That's a deep Atlanta Hawks cut for the diehard Atlanta Hawks fans listening to this podcast. But yeah, continue.
But I really do think, like, of all the returners on Tennessee's roster, I mean, Fulkerson could be a good pick here, too, of course. But, I mean, when you're a 6-year senior, there's only so much improvement you can do. Bailey, though, I do think there are pockets where if he takes the next step up, I mean, it is crazy to think about. But, like, we could end up talking about all SEC Victor Bailey in 9 months.
I'm excited for him and Powell on the floor together. The spacing that those two should provide, that Kennedy Chandler should find with those guys, should be great. I also just really like Triple J, and I'm curious to see what happens with him this year. I still think there's untapped potential with him at the 4. I still would like to see him get a lot of run there.
that I think would end up being Tennessee's best lineup, regardless mm-hmm. of what Huntley Hatfield ends up being, is JJJ at the four. Just because, I mean, like I mentioned, the amount of double big lineups in existence for top end offenses right now are minimal. Unless you've got guys who are extremely efficient on two-pointers, like Tennessee was in 18-19, it's just not a good option. And by the end of that season anyway, they were playing Grant at the five. So if they end up going Triple J at the four, I would say, like, you know, night one, that is probably the best lineup.
Yeah, I would agree. Which newcomers are most important in the SEC this fall? Well,
so I'm cheating a little bit here and taking this to, like, transfers, if that's all right.
No, that counts. Newcomers counts. Yeah, that counts, because if it's a new stop, that counts.
Lots of new transfers. Number one for me, Myron Jones at Florida, comes over from Penn State, and honestly, night one could be their best scorer and best player. I'm curious to see how he fits in, because it's not like offense is exactly Mike White's first thing as a coach. So I want to see if they can turn him loose, let him do his thing, pick up 20 points a night. Because if they do that, Florida really will be a top 20 team this year. Kellen Grady at Kentucky is another one who should be Kentucky's best player on the first night. Maybe not at the end of the season, but at the start, I think he is the most important guy. I mentioned Jabari Smith at Auburn, probably the most important freshman in the league, the one that currently looks to be most likely to be a top five pick. He'll be handed a high usage role in a high octane offense. And then Katie Johnson coming over from Georgia to Auburn is also of interest. I want to see what he does with more time at like on the court, and especially just I want to see what he does where he's not being coached by Tom Crean, because that whole experiment seems to be not going so well.
That doesn't sound right. A Tom Crean experiment not going well in the 21st century? That seems unlikely. Well, that seems unlikely. It's also just amazing that Georgia can't figure out their basketball program. It seems like with just the amount of talent in that state that it should not be this complicated.
Should it not be, like, it's not like Georgia has to be great. They don't have to be Alabama. They don't have to be Kentucky. But Georgia should be like an Ole Miss, right? Where they're like consistently mid-pack, if not better than that. Like,
just because they have the talent in the state to get a couple of those, like Jaylen Brown just leaving for Cal, and I mean, you could go up and down the list of talented Georgia locals that just don't even consider UGA and stuff like that. It's very strange. Very strange.
Did you know they have not had a single digit seed in the NCAA tournament since 2002?
That sounds right. Let me think of who the coach was then. Was that Felton?
Before Felton, it was Jim Herrick, who he
That's
got fired.
That's not a real person. That can't be real. I don't think that's real. Is he like in between Tubby and Felton? Like, I don't remember them at all. That's crazy. That's crazy. But also, who's not in favor of that? Like, shout out to Georgia just being a terrible basketball program. You love to see it. You love to see it. last thing, and we'll wrap up the SEC preview of our college basketball season. Will, as of now, how many tournament teams can we expect the SEC to produce?
My early lean here is seven. I really do think all of Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Auburn, Arkansas are like day one preseason locks. Like, where they end up remains to be seen, but at minimum, those are five teams I'd feel pretty confident about eventually being in the top 25, not even the top 20.
Mm-hmm.
Six here is Florida, which is really frustrating, because to me, like, Florida has one of the 25, maybe even 20 best rosters entering the season in college basketball. But it really is, like, does anybody trust Mike White to coach them to or above that potential? He's one of the strangest coaches to evaluate in the entire sport. So, because, like, since he came on board at Florida, only Kentucky has more quad one wins. But only three or four schools, if I remember correctly, have more quad three losses. It's like he pairs amazing defense with just absolute turds of games. it's mind-boggling to watch, because you, like, season by season, Florida will end up being like 23rd in KenPom with 14 losses, And when I'm looking at it, I'm like, that doesn't sound accurate. But then when you look at it in depth, it's like, oh, yeah, Florida beat Auburn by 23 points and then turned around and lost to Georgia by 7. That's just like what they do. And then the seventh team here should be LSU, but I am really curious to find out what happens if that offense isn't top five level and the defense is still as bad as it's been for the entire Will Wade tenure. It is a little weird to me that Will Wade was a defensive guy and is yet to have anything resembling a good defense at LSU. The other candidates, Mississippi
State. You know what blows
State
my mind,
be,
Will?
What, let's hear it.
Will Wade still having a college basketball job. That still blows my mind.
He's still there. And it is kind of fun to watch like him continuously calling LSU and the NCAA's bluff. And if they were to ever miss the NCAA tournament, I would think it might be like an immediate firing. But their goal of being the don't give enough athletic department with regards to everything they do is both horrifying and admirable in its own strange way. The other candidates for the tournament, I think Mississippi State could be in the mix, as could Ole Miss, but that would be about it. I can't really envision any of like the South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Mizzou, A&M, especially Georgia tier making it, particularly the latter two, particularly Georgia, who I think has a real shot to finish with under 3 wins in conference play this year. I'm willing to be wrong on these, but none of those 5 really have the returning talent or the incoming talent you would typically expect from tournament teams. But weirdly enough, I would say Vandy is probably closest if Pippen chooses to come back. It seems kind of up in the air because I noticed he did not get an NBA Combine invite, which was a little weird to me. So that could sway him to return to Vandy, but he could also just stay. So,
yeah. We didn't even talk about Vandy. Like, that Jerry Stackhouse got a long way to go there. They were awful last year. Just awful.
They've been awful for, like, 3 straight seasons, and no one... that is another school where, to me, you should eternally be better than you actually are. Yeah. I understand the academic restrictions, of course. I mean, those are... Vanderbilt is the hardest school to get into in the SEC, but, like, Kevin Stallings had them rolling in the late 2000s and to a lesser extent the early 2010s. Like, they were consistently a 4-6 seed in the NCAA tournament. It's not impossible to win there.
Wait, so it's not Alabama being the most difficult school to get into in the SEC?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. All right, that was I may have been led astray. That's a surprise. All right. Well, this has been good. How about this? It is June 17th as a recording. As we put a pin in the SEC, let's do ACC next week. But who do you have winning the regular season championship in the SEC this fall, as it stands right now?
It's got to be Alabama. It kills me to say this.
I'm not going to see Alabama because I think they're going to adjust. I think teams around the conference are going to adjust, and I think we're going to see a lot of change there. I'm going to say, I'm going to be a homer. I'm going to say Tennessee wins it. I'm going to say Tennessee. Tennessee's loaded.
I am still at the point where I would rather have them finish like 2nd or 3rd in the regular season if it meant they would finally, before hell freezes over and the world ends, actually win the SEC tournament. I would genuinely take that over any regular season title. It's just there's been too much heartbreak.
Yeah.
1979 is a long friggin' time.
It is. It is. All right, Will.
Way longer than 1990.
Absolutely, absolutely. Will, we should go check out your work at statsbywill.com. Follow you. The same handle. This was good. I'm excited for this. I think this will be good. I think having a stat-based approach and doing our own spin on KenPom and everything with college basketball, I think will be fun. And I think there's real stuff we can do here. So we'll keep figuring out and tinkering and get into stuff before we get into actual game tape and everything that we can parse through. But Will, thank you so much for making the time. Let's talk next week.
Absolutely. I hope your audience enjoys hearing a more Americanized Nathan Fielder talk about basketball stats.
Hey, I'm very pro Nathan Fielder. Like whenever we have a college basketball Nathan Fielder, that's what we always gotta do.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.